Mahmani's man walked parallel with the driveway for 100 yards, and then came up against a length of fence that ran south, directly across his path. It defined the lower left-hand part of the crossbar of the hollow T that was the Duncan's compound. It was made of 5-inch rails, all of them a little gnarled and warped, but easy enough to climb. He got over it without any difficulty, and paused for a second with the 3 pickup trucks and the Mazda parked to his left, and the southernmost house straight in front of him. The center house was the only one that was dark. The southernmost and the northernmost houses both had light in them, faint and a little second-hand, as if only back rooms were in use, and stray illumination was finding its way out to the front windows through internal passageways and open doors. There was the smell of wood smoke in the air, but no sound, not even talking. Mahmani's man hesitated, choosing, deciding, making up his mind. Left or right? Cassano and Mancini came on the compound from the rear, out of the dark and dormant field, and they stopped on the far side of the fence opposite the center house, which was Jonas's, as far as they knew. It was closed up and dark, but both its neighbors had light in their kitchen windows, spilling out in bright bars across the weedy backyard gravel. The gravel was matted down into the dirt, but it was still marginally noisy, Cassano knew. He had walked across it earlier in the day to find undisturbed locations for his phone calls to Rossi. Their best play would be to stay on the wrong side of the fence, in the last of the field, and then head directly for their chosen point of entry. That would reduce the sound of their approach to a minimum. But which would be their chosen point of entry? Left or right? Jasper's place or Jacob's? All 4 Duncans were in Jasper's basement, hunting through old cartons for more veterinary anesthetic. The last of the hog dope had been used on Seth's nose, and his busted hand was going to need something stronger anyway. 2 fingers were already swollen so hard the skin was fit to burst. Jasper figured he had something designed for horses, and he planned to find it and flood Seth's wrist joint with it. He was no anatomist, but he figured the affected nerves had to pass through there somewhere. Where else could they go? Seth was not complaining at the delay. Jasper figured he was taking it very well. He was growing up. He had been petulant after the broken nose, but now he was standing tall, because he had captured his assailant all by himself, obviously, and because he was planning what to do with the guy next. The glow of achievement and the prospect of revenge were anesthetics all by themselves. Jonas asked, "Is this it?" He was holding up a round pint bottle made of brown glass. Its label was stained and covered in long technical words, some of them Latin. Jasper squinted across the dim space and said, "Good man, you found it." Then they heard footsteps on the floor above their heads. Chapter 47. Jacob was first up the cellar stairs. His initial thought was that a football player was checking in, but the floors in their houses were typical of old-style construction in rural America, built of boards cut from the hearts of old pines, thick and dense and heavy, capable of transmitting noise but not detail. So it was not possible to say who was in the house by sound alone. He saw no one in the hallway, but when he got to the kitchen, he found a man in there, standing still, small and wiry, dark and dead-eyed, rumpled, not very clean, wearing a buttoned shirt without a tie, holding a knife in his left hand and a gun in his right. The knife was held low, but the gun was pointing straight at the center of Jacob's chest. Jacob stood still. The man put his knife on the kitchen table and raised his forefinger to his lips. Jacob made no sound. Behind him, his son and his brothers crowded into the kitchen, too soon to be stopped. The man moved the muzzle of his gun left and right, back and forth. The 4 Duncans lined up, shoulder to shoulder. The man turned his wrist and moved the muzzle down and up, down and up, patting the air with it. No one moved. The man said, "Get on your knees." Jacob asked, "Who are you?" The man said, "You killed my friend." "I didn't." "One of you Duncans did." "We didn't. We don't even know who you are." "Get on your knees." "Who are you?" The little man picked up his knife again and asked, "Which one of you is Seth?" Seth Duncan paused a beat and then raised his good hand like a kid in class. The little man said, "You killed my friend, and you put his body in the trunk of your Cadillac." Jacob said, "No, Reacher stole that car this afternoon. It was him." "Reacher doesn't exist." "He does. He broke my son's nose and his hand." The gun didn't move, but the little man turned his head and looked at Seth. The aluminum splint, the swollen fingers. Jacob said, "We haven't left here all day. But Reacher was at the Marriott this afternoon and this evening. We know that. He left the Cadillac there." "Where is he now?" "We're not sure. Close by, we think." "How did he get back?" "Perhaps he took your rental car." "Did your friend have a key?" The little man didn't answer. Jacob asked, "Who are you?" "I represent Mahmani." "We don't know who that is." "He buys your merchandise from Safir." "We don't know anyone of that name either. We sell to an Italian gentleman in Las Vegas, name of Mr. Rossi. And after that, we have no further interest." "You're trying to cut everyone out." "We're not. We're trying to get our shipment home, that's all." "Where is it?" "On its way. But we can't bring it in until Reacher is down." "Why not?" "You know why not. This kind of business can't be done in public. You should be helping us, not pointing guns at us." The little man didn't answer. Jacob said, "Put the gun away and let's all sit down and talk. We're all on the same side here." The little man kept the gun straight and level and said, "Safir's men are dead, too." "Reacher," Jacob said, "he's on the loose. What about Rossi's boys?"